The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and also from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first thing I'm going to cover is a news brief from the Harvard Health Letter of February 2023. And it's entitled, Don't Count on a Supplement to Fix High Cholesterol. Six types of supplements touted to reduce high cholesterol don't do the job, according to a randomized trial published online October 19, 2022, by the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. Researchers, including Harvard experts, randomly assigned 190 people aged 40 to 75 with high levels of bad LDL cholesterol to take either 5 milligrams of the cholesterol-lowering statin drug rosuvastatin, a supplement containing fish oil, cinnamon, garlic, turmeric, plant sterols, or red yeast rice, or a placebo. After 4 weeks, people in the statin group had a 37% drop in LDL cholesterol, a 24% drop in total cholesterol, and a 19% drop in blood triglycerides. Meanwhile, people in the supplement and placebo groups didn't have any significant decreases in these measures. In fact, there were some adverse effects. LDL cholesterol went up for people taking garlic, and good HDL cholesterol dropped for people taking the plant sterols, compared with people taking a placebo. The study was brief, and researchers say it's possible it wasn't long enough to give some supplements a chance to work. But they also point out that the contents of dietary supplements vary and don't produce consistent results. They warn that supplements that are marketed for cholesterol or heart health are unlikely to be effective. Now I'm going to read an article again from the Harvard Health Letter of February 2023, and it's entitled, Reduce or Avoid Back Pain During These Everyday Activities. It takes a combination of quick fixes and long-term strategies. Here is what you can do. There's never a good time for back pain to strike, but there are good strategies for coping with it. If you're among the millions of people struggling with back pain, 8 out of 10 people experience it at some point in their lives, especially low back pain. You'll want to know what to do. What causes back pain? The spine is a strong and complex tower of bones, with many parts that are prone to irritation, injury, wear, and tear. For example, joints that connect one vertebrae to another can deteriorate. Discs that act as cushions between vertebrae can become deformed, irritating nearby nerve roots, and the bones themselves can sprout little growths or spurs that jab into nerves. You may already know that you have a back problem, or you may discover it when you suddenly experience pain. What should you do? Consider the following scenarios. Driving a car. Sitting for long periods or in an awkward position puts pressure on your back. Use a lumbar pillow to support your low back. If you don't have a pillow, try using a water bottle wrapped in a towel. And if you're sitting too far from the steering wheel, try moving it closer and see how you feel, says Mason Gray, a physical therapist at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. Other ways to relieve pain while driving. If your vehicle has heated seats, turn them on as a heat therapy to reduce pain and relax muscles. Or pull over and take pressure off your back by walking around for a few minutes, Gray suggests. Sitting at a desk. Like sitting in a car for a long time, sitting at a desk for prolonged periods can lead to back pain. Try to move every hour, Gray says. go get a drink of water, or stand up and stretch. He also recommends using a lumbar pillow to support your low back, using heat or cold, or switching to a standing desk for a little while, or simply working at a bar-height countertop, again, just for a little while, to get you out of the seated position. You might think walking around a mall is mostly hard on your feet, but it can also cause a sore back. It could be that you're carrying a heavy shopping bag or handbag on one side of your body, which puts an uneven load on that side for long periods. Gray recommends carrying bags on both sides of your body, not just one, to distribute the weight. If you carry a handbag, remove some of its contents before you go out, so you'll lighten the load. Lifting weights is a great way to build a strong and healthy back, but if you aren't mindful of your form and technique, you can set yourself up for back pain. If you experience pain while exercising, Gray says you shouldn't push through the discomfort. Stop what you're doing and evaluate what's causing the back pain, he says. Are you using more weight than you can handle? Consider reducing the weight. If you can't modify your way out of pain with an exercise, your best move is to skip it for that day. When lifting a heavy load, like a grocery bag, a laundry basket, or a precious grandchild who runs into your arms, the sudden increase in pressure on your back can irritate the back's joints, discs, muscles, and nerves. Put down your heavy load immediately so you don't injure your back. Try lifting the load again with the right technique. Get as close to the object as you can and bend your knees a little. Wrap your arms around the object, push down with your legs, and stand up straight. To carry the object, keep it close to your chest. Sometimes back pain occurs while you're simply lying in bed. Maybe your sleep position is putting pressure on your back. If you're a back sleeper, try putting a pillow under your knees to distribute pressure better. If you're a side sleeper, put a pillow between your knees or use a very long, narrow body pillow and put your arm over it. Easing back pain when it strikes is important, but it's not a permanent solution. If back pain lasts more than a week, see your doctor for an evaluation. If you need treatment, the first line of defense will most likely be exercise and strengthening regimens, two keys to staving off an aching back. Other long-term fixes include always using a lumbar pillow when sitting, getting a new bed topper or a new mattress if you feel your bed is contributing to back problems, and sitting up straighter at your desk with your knees at a 90-degree angle. Managing chronic stress may also help to ease your discomfort. People who have a lot of stress are more likely to have back pain, Gray says. Managing stress with exercise, meditation, a healthy diet, and better sleep may be one of your secret weapons to keep your back from bothering you. The article goes on to ask, will TENS therapy, that's T-E-N-S, ease your back pain? Transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, or TENS therapy, T-E-N-S, uses low-level electrical current on the skin to interrupt pain signals. While some people swear by it, it doesn't work for everyone, and studies about its effectiveness for low back pain have produced mixed results. Some medical organizations, like the American Academy of Neurology and the American College of Physicians, do not endorse TENS for chronic back pain. Still, TENS therapy is a low-risk option that doctors often recommend. You can see a physical therapist for TENS therapy, or you can get a home TENS unit. Ask your doctor or physical therapist about the voltage that's safe for your condition. Prices for a home TENS unit start at about $25. Now here's an article again from the Harvard Health Letter that's entitled, What's Keeping You From Getting a Good Night's Sleep? Identify your sleep interrupters with this list of potential offenders. Remember when you can crawl into bed at night and sleep straight through until morning? Now you wake up several times every night, wondering if you'll ever slumber for long stretches again. This change in sleep habits called sleep fragmentation is a natural part of aging, and generally nothing to worry about if you can still get 7 to 9 hours of nightly shut-eye. The concern comes when sleep fragmentation regularly reduces how many hours you sleep, or keeps you from waking up and feeling refreshed. In that case, something else is probably contributing to the problem, and we need to identify it and treat it, says Dr. Suzanne Bertisch, clinical director of behavioral sleep medicine at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Sleep is the body's time for restoration and recuperation. It's when toxins are flushed out of the brain. Tissue is repaired, muscles grow, memories are consolidated, and hormones are released. Over time, getting too little sleep or fragmented sleep impairs concentration and mood and increases the risk for obesity, high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, stroke, cognitive decline, premature death, and possibly glaucoma. There's a long list of culprits that can interrupt sleep, and you may have a number of them, which compounds the problem. Here are some examples. The first is electronics. Electronic gadgets are conveniences of modern life, but they create inconvenient side effects when the light from smartphone screens stimulates your brain and keeps you from falling asleep, or when the noise from a TV show, music playlist, or podcast that's playing overnight rouses you from slumber. Do you have a bed partner who snores or kicks while sleeping? Are pets or children climbing into bed with you? You might not be able to sleep through those disruptions, especially if bed partners crowd you into uncomfortable sleep positions. Eating or drinking anything with caffeine later in the day, like chocolate, tea, or coffee, can make it hard to stay asleep. So can a late-night snack. It tastes good going down, but it can come back up during the night as stomach acid that causes heartburn. Drinking alcohol in the evening also promotes interrupted sleep. Alcohol can help you fall asleep at first, but then it causes fragmentation as it wears off. Many health conditions can keep you from sleeping through the night. Examples are sleep apnea, pauses in breathing during sleep, chronic pain, neuropathy, hot flashes, stress, anxiety or depression, bladder issues that cause frequent nighttime bathroom trips, or tinnitus, which means ringing in the ears. Pills are supposed to help us cope with health problems, not cause them. Yet some medications interfere with sleep. Examples include some antidepressants, steroids, beta blockers, and drugs that treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Is your bed uncomfortable? Is your room too hot? Is there light coming in through the window? These can all interrupt sleep. If you wake up feeling that you didn't get enough sleep, if that's interfering with your day, it's time to get help. Your primary care doctor can look for causes of sleep interruption and prescribe treatment if necessary. For example, treatment might be medication if you have heartburn, or a course of cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. A combination of specific behavior changes, like limiting your time in bed, setting regular wake times, and using relaxation techniques. And often, despite how long people have had trouble sleeping, with behavioral changes, treating underlying issues, and at times using targeted sleep medications, we can improve people's sleep and improve their quality of life, Dr. Bertisch says. Now we're going to go on to a special report from the Mayo Clinic concerning lung disorders. This is a supplement to the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. lung disorders, breathing easier despite a concerning diagnosis. Ouch. Mary Preble, a sous chef in a Rhode Island kitchen, banged the right side of her rib cage against the sweet potato slicing machine. This was in 1997. An x-ray revealed something much more than bruised ribs. She had lung cancer. The diagnosis was incidental. If she hadn't bumped the slicer, she wouldn't have known about the cancer. It was found by mistake, like many lung cancers in people of my generation, says Preble, who is now 75. In the 25 years since her diagnosis, she survived several recurrences of lung cancer. While the cancer has come and gone, related lung conditions, particularly chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, and emphysema, have been constants. I figured I had emphysema because most everybody who smoked had it, she says. But COPD, I had never heard of that. Preble is a survivor with stories to tell. She's operated a commercial fishing charter boat, taught second grade, been a professional artist, and worked as a legal secretary. Her resilient nature met its biggest challenge when her lung problems began. But they've proved no match. She quit smoking overnight, ending what had been a daily habit since her first drag at summer camp when she was 15. Her workout routine went from not much to daily four-mile walks around the neighborhood, departing before sunrise. She's traveled to Europe twice, showing COPD that it couldn't keep her down. She mentors others on Mayo Clinic Connect, an online discussion forum, and isn't shy to share her message. My advice is to have anyone in a high-risk group get checked with a CT scan, she says. Everyone who has lungs can get a number of illnesses, and not just smoking-related disease or cancer. Ask for thorough testing if you have chest pains or trouble breathing. Don't sit back and think that it will go away, because it won't, but it can be treated. Every time you inhale, air travels through your windpipe into tubes in your lungs called bronchial tubes or airways. These airways branch many times in your lungs, dividing into thousands of smaller, thinner tubes called bronchioles. At the end of each bronchiole are clusters of tiny air sacs called alveoli. Healthy lungs have about 300 million alveoli. Inside the walls of the alveoli, tiny blood vessels called capillaries absorb inhaled oxygen and release carbon dioxide so it can be exhaled. Healthy bronchioles and alveoli are stretchy. When you breathe in, the little air sacs fill up like balloons. When you exhale, they deflate. Although a slight decline in lung function is a typical part of aging, it's a different scenario for lungs damaged by the factors that cause COPD. COPD is a group of lung diseases that limit airflow as you exhale and make it increasingly difficult for you to breathe out. COPD affects millions of Americans and is a growing health concern. It's usually attributed to exposure to tobacco smoke or other airborne irritants over a lengthy period of time, usually at least a decade. Most often, it affects smokers or former smokers. Left untreated, COPD progresses and literally takes your breath away. It's a leading cause of death in the United States and around the world. With COPD, the airways can be thickened or plugged with mucus, and the air sacs can be destroyed and very floppy. As a result, the lungs can't expel air as well, so they become less efficient. Changes due to COPD accelerate the typical age-related decline in lung function, and the damage is only partially reversible. That's why early diagnosis, treatment, and prevention particularly quitting smoking, and being physically active, are critically important. When COPD is detected earlier and at a milder stage, management likely means that your symptoms will remain tolerable for longer and may even improve. The risk of developing COPD is mainly determined by what your lungs are exposed to and for how long. Risk factors include exposure to tobacco smoke. The most significant risk factor for COPD is long-term cigarette smoking. The more years and more packs you smoke, the greater your risk. Pipe smokers, cigar smokers, and marijuana smokers are also at risk, as are people exposed to large amounts of secondary smoke. The long-term risks associated with vaping are not fully understood yet, in part because the practice hasn't been widespread for long enough to conduct extended studies. Oil-based vaping liquids are likely to be harmful, since the lungs do not efficiently remove oils from the airways and alveoli. Alveolar macrophages, which are cells that pick up particles in the lungs, can be overwhelmed by excess inhaled particulate or oily material. Other respiratory conditions. Asthma, a chronic inflammatory airway disease, may be a risk factor for developing COPD. The combination of asthma and smoking further increases the risk of COPD. Occupational exposure. Exposure to chemical fumes, vapors, and dusts in the workplace or with your hobbies can irritate and inflame the lungs. Exposure to fumes from burning. In the developing world, people exposed to fumes from burning fuel for cooking and heating in poorly ventilated homes have an increased risk of developing COPD. Genetics. The genetic disorder alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency is a cause of 1% of cases of COPD. Like asthma, this risk is even higher in those who also smoke. Other genetic factors likely contribute to the risk of developing the disease. The symptoms of COPD are usually slow and progressive. They may resemble a cold that doesn't go away. Symptoms may include shortness of breath, wheezing, chest tightness, chronic cough, and sputum or phlegm production. COPD is also associated with chronic bronchitis. Chronic bronchitis affects 9 million Americans. More women than men are affected. While some forms of bronchitis occur for only short duration, chronic bronchitis persists. In both acute and chronic bronchitis, the condition is due to inflammation of the lining of the bronchial tubes, which carry air to and from the lungs. People who have bronchitis often cough up thick, discolored mucus. Chronic bronchitis is characterized by chronic inflammation and thickening of the airways, which may affect your health longer and more severely than acute bronchitis does. Typically, it's defined by a daily mucus-producing cough that lasts for at least 3 months, with recurring bouts for at least 2 consecutive years. If you have chronic bronchitis, your cough or other symptoms will sometimes worsen. At those times, you may have an acute infection, like the common cold, on top of the chronic bronchitis. Emphysema affects 2 million Americans. More men than women are affected. More people with emphysema also have chronic bronchitis. Emphysema gradually destroys the inner walls of the alveolar cluster, which reduces the surface area available to exchange oxygen for carbon dioxide. In addition, the alveolar walls become weaker and less elastic, so they collapse during exhalation, trapping air. The chest muscles have to work harder to move air in and out, causing shortness of breath. You can have emphysema for many years without noticing any symptoms. You may start avoiding or limiting activities so that symptoms don't interfere with daily tasks. Emphysema can eventually cause shortness of breath even at rest. Accurate diagnosis is important. Lung disorders are numerous but have a limited number of overlapping symptoms. Making a correct diagnosis can be difficult, so referral to a lung specialist may help to verify the diagnosis. Pinpointing COPD involves a thorough medical history and physical exam. Tests may include a chest X-ray, which can help detect pneumonia or another condition that's causing your cough and shortness of breath. A chest X-ray can also support a diagnosis of advanced emphysema, although it may show no unusual findings. Then there's a CT scan or computerized tomography. These combine X-ray images taken from many different directions to create cross-sectional views of internal organs. CT scans can detect and diagnose emphysema better than chest X-ray. Increasingly, CT is being used to screen current and former smokers for lung cancer. And you may have a CT scan if you're a candidate for lung surgery or your care team is looking for blood clots. Lab tests. Blood taken from an artery in your wrist can be tested to determine how well your lungs transfer oxygen into and remove carbon dioxide from your bloodstream. Lung function tests. These breathing tests measure how much air your lungs hold and how that air flows in and out. They also can measure how well your lungs deliver oxygen to your bloodstream. One common test uses a simple instrument called a spirometer, which you blow into. The spirometer measures how much air your lungs can hold and how fast you can blow air out of your lungs. Spirometry is an important test for current or former smokers with COPD symptoms. I'm going to go ahead and stop the article at that point. It looks like we ran out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.